Good evening. This is Heartstock Radio. I'm your host, Carol Murphy, and Clark is manning the board. It's another kind of chilly day. Yes, I made the bold move of planting a dahlia in my beautiful pots outside, and it got frostbitten. Dang it. I hate it when that happens. Soon, summer will be here. And today, our guest is Crystal Corson. She is the VP of Sales and Marketing at Clover Sonoma. She's got a lot to share with us and tell you all about her story here in just a moment. Remember, you can find us on Facebook, or you can also email us at heartstockradio@gmail.com. In just a moment, Crystal will be with us. Thanks for listening. But on the other side, it didn't say nothing. That time was made for you and me. This land is your land, this land is my land. From California to New York Island, from the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters. This land was made for you and me. This land was made for you and me. This is Heartstock Radio. And I'm your host, Carol Murphy. Thank you so much for tuning in. We have a guest today that we had to reschedule. She was actually the first guest that we had to reschedule due to coronavirus. So we've been waiting with bated breath for some time now for Crystal. And Crystal Corson, she is the VP of Sales and Marketing at Clover Sonoma. Hi, Crystal. Thank you so much for joining us.
Good afternoon. I'm glad to be here.
Please tell our listeners just a little intro here about yourself and Clover Sonoma. It's a rather special company, if I do say so myself.
Well, thank you. Well, I have been with Clover Sonoma for a little over 4 years. I have been in sales and marketing, gosh, it's kind of scary to say, over 25 years, but really have sort of found my place here at Clover. I have always been in sales and marketing. It's consumer goods have been a passion of mine. I spent my first 10 years in the toy industry, actually. It was a great place to learn brand marketing, and there's always lots of new things you have to launch every year, and you know, it gave me some great foundation. But after those 10 years, I found, you know, I was living in Northern California and really wanted to stay here. Northern California is not a hotbed for the toy industry. And so I found my way into food and beverage. And, you know, the company that really sort of altered my path in my career was Cliff Bar & Company. I headed up the Luna Bar brand, which is a bar that is made specifically for women. And during that time, I just learned, you know, a lot about natural, organic, how important nutrition, you know, the ingredients that, you know, go into your food. And that's really what I think has led me from there to really focus on working for companies that, you know, have a triple bottom line type of perspective, ones that, you know, really care about the product that they put out there. And, you know, spent a couple of years working on the Luna brand. After that, I was able to work for Jamba Juice. Jamba Juice had been a private company that had gone IPO. However, they had started to lose some market share, and so they wanted to try to get back to their roots of better ingredients. And so went to there next and helped them, you know, get rid of ingredients like high fructose corn syrup out of their mixes and just try to, you know, help them become more healthy. Jamba Juice was, you know, a big company. And so I, after that, found my way, as you're probably going to start to see as a pattern, is I do like new challenges. And from there, I went to a entrepreneurial startup a company that's called Yes2. And Yes2 is personal care, so they make hair care, body care, skin care, but all of the ingredients, the main ones, are organic fruits and vegetables. And so I was the first U.S. employee in this entrepreneurial startup, and then we became, within about 4 years, number two to Burt's Bees. And, you know, a lot of fun, crazy times as you are starting to get a new brand launched and, you know, as it starts to take off. Then, you know, life sort of hit and I had my first child while I was at a startup, which is quite a challenge. And so when I got pregnant, my second child, I actually decided it was time to take a break. But after I did that and wanted to kind of get back into the workforce again, really wanted to continue to work for companies that have a mission. So I actually took a little step to the side and went back into the toy industry and worked for a company called Leapfrog that some people may remember. They had their first Leap Pad, you know, the toy that was similar to an iPad back in the day. And it was just a lot of fun. It definitely got me, you know, remembering why I enjoyed the toy industry so much. And, you know, really stayed with them for quite some time. We launched a number of new toys as well as the kind of interactive gaming over the years. During this time, I'd moved up to a lovely town called Petaluma. Petaluma is quite far from Leapfrog, and so the commute finally started to get to me. And so I found my place here at Clover. And, you know, when I started looking for a brand close to home, you know, I had grown up on Clover. They've been around as a brand for over 100 years. Clover Sonoma was really founded as its own company in 1977. And it has a little neat story. It's third generation now. It's family owned, still independent. And, you know, as I obviously heading up both the sales and the marketing, I've really gotten to learn its story. And, you know, in the beginning with the first generation, it was an entrepreneurial startup, so to speak. It was just trying to, you know, figure out how to survive in the commodity world of dairy. And really, you know, the founder, Gene Benedetti, did that on relationships and really community involvement. So those two components have really weaved into the ethos of Clover Sonoma. And then his son took over, you know, years later, and his name is Gan Benedetti. And he is the one that really turned Clover from more of, you know, a basic kind of dairy commodity milk business into a brand. And, you know, he did that not only by following the same ethos around relationships and community, but this is a time, you know, in the late 80s, early 90s, when people were really starting to ask the question about their food source and, you know, how were things made. And sort of the big turning point for Clover was when Monsanto, you know, started trying to put the growth hormone RBSP into the milk supply. You know, he said, wait a minute, you know, have you guys asked consumers what they think about this? And is this even good for the cow? And so Clover was the first dairy west of the Mississippi to basically say, you know, no, we will not, you know, have milk that use the growth hormone in the cows. And so at that point, you know, since all milk was sort of purchased through co-ops and you know, you were buying out of a pool of milk, it meant that Clover had to do something different. And so he went around to local dairies here in Sonoma and Marin counties, signed them up under today what is called the Clover Promise of Excellence, which first and foremost, it was you cannot use the RBSG growth hormone in your production of milk. And, you know, a number of other things such as, you know, ranch appearance. And within the next couple of years, one of the biggest things that was added to this promise or this set of standards that we created was, you know, each dairy had to become American Humane Certified. You know, it was really kind of going back to the central sort of cast in dairy, which is the cow and how they're treated. And in fact, today, this year, we're celebrating our 20th year anniversary of being American Humane Certified. And not only were we the first, but we really sat down with American Humane and our farmers and, you know, sort of their experts all worked together to set the dairy standards that now other dairies can get certified against. So that was a really exciting, you know, point in time for Clover as they kind of continued building this sort of premium dairy brand that we are today. And then shortly after that, when organic started to come, many of you may have heard of Strauss Milk. They were the first to get organic. We were the second here in the West Coast. And really, you know, due to our size, we're the ones that helped propel the movement of organic milk. And so, you know, since then, we, you know, continue to grow as both a, you know, organic and a conventional milk supplier. But we've, you know, expanded out into 10 different categories. We've got, you know, ice cream, cottage cheese, yogurt, sour cream. And so is cheese, organic cheese is one of the latest things that we launched and is doing very well. But it's really all, you know, predicated around this mission of being a brand that really is about elevating dairy or different than a lot of the dairy, you know, larger factory type farming that is prevalent throughout the United States. And it really comes back to this relationship that we have, not only obviously with the consumer, but really sort of the our dairy farms and, you know, what we do with them. That's kind of, I guess, in a quick nutshell, both what, you know, where I am today and kind of what led me there.
Yes, and before I moved back here to Montana, I was in the Central Valley, and Kings and Tulare County have a lot of commercial dairies. And I saw a lot of struggles, a lot of dairies went out of business. What is Clover's key to success? Is it the fact that they have differentiated themselves as kind of going the extra mile?
I mean, I do think that is it. I mean, specifically, again, I think it's having, you know, these relationships that we have with 30 farms. You know, we work independently with them, or should say exclusively with them. And, you know, because they're hitting this set of standards, you know, we pay them slightly above market in order, you know, to sort of make this work. And we, you know, really worked hard at kind of communicating that difference out to consumers. And, you know, again, as more and more consumers really want to understand where their food source comes from, you know, being able to talk about the fact that, you know, we know where our milk comes from and which specific dairies we're able to show it out there, I think that goes a long way. Our model of this sort of closed-loop sourcing, so to speak, is unique. And, you know, it's something that I think, you know, has definitely connected with consumers. And then, you know, on the other side, Clover has, you know, now this goes back to the, you know, original founder, Gene. You know, we believe in relationships, so we try to develop a relationship with consumers as well as our retail partners. But, you know, we've had this fun mascot since 1969. Her name is Clo the Cow, and she's a witty, fun-loving punster that is on billboards throughout this area in Sonoma and Marin County up in Sacramento. And she's been on these billboards with these funny puns since 1969. And it just, you know, there's this relationship that we have with our consumer base. And, you know, we've been really focused, you know, up until pretty much right before I came on board on, you know, Northern California. But now we're really trying to take, you know, our products and sort of our way of going to market outside. So we've expanded into Southern California in a pretty big way, and, you know, we're looking in, you know, a couple other states in and around California do carry us, and we hope that we can continue to expand on out.
Mm-hmm. We're going to take our midway break here in just a moment. We shall be back, and Crystal will tell us a little bit more about Clover Sonoma. This is Heartstock. Thanks for listening. This is Heartstock Radio. I'm your host, Carol Murphy. And today we are speaking with Crystal Corson. She is the VP of Sales and Marketing at Clover Sonoma. Hi again, Crystal.
Hello.
So one of the things that I really want to give voice to here is the fact that you guys are a B Corporation. Maybe for our listeners to begin with, we should explain exactly what that means. And then if you could please share what your experience was like becoming a B Corporation and why it was so important to do so.
Yeah, so, you know, B Corps are businesses that want to use business as a force for good. And it is a third-party accreditation to that. You know, you go through an auditing process where they look at your overall governance of your business, the transparency that you have with consumers and employees, the social responsibility, as well as the environmental responsibility side. So it's a pretty extensive process that you have to go through, and you score points within each of those areas. I think the total points possible are probably 200. The average that most people get when they first go through the auditing process is 55, yet you need 80 to qualify. So it is a third party, and it's pretty rigorous to really be able to achieve the true certification. Mm-hmm. The reason that we went after getting a B Corp certification, there was a couple of reasons. I mean, it definitely is something that's sort of up and coming out there for consumers, millennials in particular. You know, you hear a lot about people sort of looking for the companies or the brands that you know, do use business as a force for good. But for us, it really was an interesting way to be able to get credit or, you know, be able to kind of showcase all that we've done over the years, because they do look back and kind of ask you about your policies and the things that you're doing. So a lot of the give back in the social community, a lot of the environmental work we've done with the farms, you know, that all really played into us being able to become certified. But we also really wanted, you know, to be able to figure out the best way to create a roadmap going forward. You have to recertify every 3 years, and you have to basically, you start from zero and you sort of go back through. It's not like you have your points and then you just keep adding on to them. So we knew that through this process, you know, not only would we be able to sort of showcase or talk about what we've done, but we would be able to put together plans sort of to keep doing better. And so the first time that we went through it, a little over 3 years ago, our first time out, we received a score of 97. So again, you know, when the average is 55, people are at, you need 80 to certify, and then we received 97. That was a very, you know, proud sort of moment in time for Clover. And, you know, it was nice to see that we scored well kind of across the board. So it wasn't like we had to pick one area and really focus. But it also did let us see a number of areas that we could improve upon. And so, you know, over the time since we became B-Corp certified the first time, you know, we've done things like we were able to reframe our give back so that we're very clear to consumers that we give back 5%, at least 5% of profits every year to nonprofits that are focused in three specific areas. The program's called Clover Cares, and the areas that we really focused on are empowering future generations, elevating dairy, and supporting the community. And so this is, you know, something that since we have always been one of those companies that people will come to for product donations or for help, this has really helped us be able to focus our giving. You know, when you think about COVID-19 right now, this is one of the most important times you need to help the community. And so when this hit, we decided to really put one chunk of what we typically do in the year and give that to our local hospital to help them buy ventilators. So we donated over $100,000 to allow them to buy some much needed ventilators to prepare. as well as put together a marketing campaign to share it with consumers and try to help them raise even more money. And so in addition to, you know, what we donated, we've been able to, through the community, to raise over, you know, another $40,000 to date. So those types of things that, you know, we feel really good about, and I feel like B Corp has helped us shape some of this. So that's been exciting. We've been able to work a lot on the employee side. We've been able to put together volunteer programs that are put together by the company to help our employees get more involved in the community. We've, you know, started to really look at our overall footprint on the environmental side. So not just all the work we had done previously on the dairy farms, but now we're really looking at sort of our delivery trucks and our footprint as it relates to, you know, waste and water. So, you know, the B Corp, I feel very strongly about it. I think it's a great thing for, you know, I would love to see all companies sort of go through it, but it does require, you know, a lot of that transparency, and you really have to show sort of a track record over time, and then also take their cues and pointers for what you could do better. So we just went through our recertification process again, and actually were able to squeak out a couple more points. We broke the 100 mark to 100.5, and again, just because you have to start from sort of a ground zero each time, it was a great accomplishment, and we're excited to continue to help more companies become B Corps. I mean, one of the big things about B Corps is there's a huge community aspect to the B Corp family. You know, we work with other B Corps. We try to buy from other B Corps. We just do a fun kind of collaboration with a pet company that creates, you know, pet toys. And so they're creating a clover little pint heavy whipping cream dog toy. And, you know, we're both kind of investing in it, but then also giving some of the proceeds to, we're picking a nonprofit. So you get to do fun things like that as well. It's a great community to be part of.
Mm-hmm. I'm really curious to hear more about the work that you did even before becoming a B Corp on the farms, because there's an awful lot of pushback in communities where I have lived before in the past regarding the environmental impact of very large farms. Can you kind of give us an idea of some of the work that you did to make dairy farms more environmentally friendly?
Yeah, so because of our location here in Northern California, you know, we actually have each of our dairy farms, you know, have quite a bit of acreage. And so, you know, by nature, the cows that are on our 30 farms throughout this area really do a lot of grazing and out on pasture. I mean, you know, weather permitting, but they get to roam and kind of, you know, be out and about. So, you know, from that emission sort of standpoint of the more concentrated factory farms or large farms, you know, we're kind of not in that family, which right then and there is good for the environment. I mean, our average herd size across all of our farms is about 465. I think California has about 1,200. And, you know, a large factory farm could have tens of thousands of cows. So it's a really different sort of effect on the environment. But even so, you know, we've done things like each of our farms, they all have a, it's not a fun subject to talk about, but a manure plan to ensure that it's not sort of, you know, that it's all being used through, you know, going out there and spreading it for crops and different things or taking it out or ponds. So everybody has their own manure management plan. Many of our farms, due to their landed acreage, they do rotational rot, excuse me, crop. And so, you know, they all have their cows grazing on one part while they're growing another part, and then they sort of switch through it. So that rotational grazing. Many of them now are getting grants and working, you know, on different things to keep improving the soil and, you know, adding back in the carbon that it needs. And so, you know, the thing about working exclusively with 30 farms is they're all independent. So we don't own these farms. They are their own. And so, you know, we've given them each the leeway, you know, as part of those standards, they each need to make environmental improvements to their land each year. And we try to, you know, work with them and showcase it through things like Stories from the Farm, which are videos we do. but you know, it's not sort of a one size fits all approach. It's definitely unique to each of these farms. And I'd say kind of the last thing about each of the farms is most of them are multi-generational. And so, you know, we have some that are four or five and six generations. So you can imagine just to be able to have that much land and keep it going and have a sustainable business, especially in kind of the area in this day, they, most of them have figured out how to be very, not just financially stable, but, you know, environmentally sustainable.
Mm-hmm. And how has COVID-19 affected your operations? We've probably got about 2 minutes left, and I want to save a little time so you can tell folks more about how they might reach you.
Yeah, so COVID-19, well, I think everybody talks about this being a new world, and this has been a crazy time for us. You know, we're lucky in the sense that we do have a diversified business, so we have a lot, you know, probably a third of our business that is food service, and then others that is more in that grocery and retail. So luckily, even though our food service business has completely dropped off, the grocery and the retail side has gone through the roof, and it's been kind of interesting to watch how it's pretty much evened out. From a milk supply standpoint, you know, we've been able to really fill the demand that's been out there. We haven't had any issues. Where there have been some and where it's been hard is, you know, on some of what we call the milk products or the byproducts of dairy. So butter, eggs, those are probably the two that have been the hardest. I think now that we're kind of 11, 12 weeks in, everybody's sort of starting to get the supply chain in order. But in the beginning, with everybody being home and the kids baking more and families, you know, cooking dinners more, there was definitely a period of time where eggs and butter were in short supply. But overall, I mean, I think, you know, we've fared, you know, pretty well and, you know, been lucky. You know, we have not had a case in our facility or anything like that. So, yeah, right now things are doing okay. We're just trying to, you know, stay vigilant and sort of with the protocols at the plant and on the farms and such, just to make sure that we can keep doing what we've been doing.
Mm-hmm. Well, congratulations on all that you've accomplished. How might folks find and reach you if they have more questions or would like to learn more about Clover Sonoma?
Yeah. Well, probably one of the easiest ways, or easiest way to remember, I should say, is the Clover Sonoma website, which is just that. It's cloversonoma.com. There is a contact area in there, and my team kind of checks that. So, yeah, if there were any questions, I would think the easiest way would be to go on to our website. We also, of course, have a Clover Sonoma Facebook and Instagram page, as well as LinkedIn. So any of the social channels really would work as well.
Mm-hmm. Thank you so much, Crystal. I really appreciate you coming and sharing your story and the work that you do.
Well, thank you for having me. I've enjoyed it. Thank you so much.
Good, good. This is Heartstock. We shall see you next week. Thanks for listening. Peace.
The sign it said, no trespass.
Heartstock Radio is a production of KBMF 102.5 Butte America Radio. Hear our live programs every Friday at 5 p.m. Mountain Standard Time via live stream at butteamericaradio.org.
That's